Chapter 11. The next morning, I don't hear the alarm, shuffling feet or conversations as the other initiates get ready. I wake to Christina shaking my shoulder with one hand and tapping my cheek with the other. She already wears a black jacket zipped up to her throat. If she has bruises from yesterday's fight, her dark skin makes them difficult to see. "Come on," she says, "up and at 'em." I dreamt that Peter tied me to a chair and asked me if I was divergent. I answered no, and he punched me until I said yes. I woke up with wet cheeks. I mean to say something, but all I can do is groan. My body aches so badly it hurts to breathe. It doesn't help that last night's bout of crying made my eyes swell. Christina offers me her hand. The clock reads 8. We're supposed to be at the tracks by 8:15. "I'll run and get us some breakfast. You just get ready. Looks like it might take you a while," she says. I grunt, trying not to bend at the waist. I fumble in the drawer under my bed for a clean shirt. Luckily, Peter isn't here to see me struggle. Once Christina leaves, the dormitory is empty. I unbutton my shirt and stare at my bare side, which is patched with bruises. For a second, the colors mesmerize me. Bright green and deep blue and brown. I change as fast as I can and let my hair hang loose because I can't lift my arms to tie it back. I look at my reflection in the small mirror on the back wall and see a stranger. She is blonde like me, with a narrow face like mine, but that's where the similarities stop. I do not have a black eye and a split lip and a bruised jaw. I am not as pale as a sheet. She can't possibly be me, though she moves when I move. By the time Christina comes back, a muffin in each hand, I'm sitting on the edge of my bed staring at my untied shoes. I will have to bend over to tie them. It will hurt when I bend over. But Christina just passes me a muffin and crouches in front of me to tie my shoes. Gratitude surges in my chest, warm and a little like an ache. Maybe there is some abnegation in everyone. Even if they don't know it. Well, and everyone but Peter. "Thank you," I say. "Well, we would never get there on time if you had to tie them yourself," she says. "Come on. You can eat and walk at the same time, right?" We walk fast toward the pit. The muffin is banana flavored, with walnuts. My mother baked bread like this once, to give to the factionless, but I never got to try it. I was too old for coddling at that point. I ignore the pinch in my stomach that comes every time I think of my mother, and half walk, half jog after Christina, who forgets that her legs are longer than mine. We climb the steps from the pit to the glass building above it and run to the exit. Every thump of my feet sends pain through my ribs, but I ignore it. We make it to the tracks just as the train arrives, its horn blaring. "What took you so long?" Will shouts over the horn. "Stumpy legs over here turned into an old lady overnight," says Christina. "Oh, shut up." I'm only half kidding. Four stands at the front of the pack, so close to the tracks that if he shifted even an inch forward, the train would take his nose with it. He steps back to let some of the others get on first. Will hoists himself into the car with some difficulty, landing first on his stomach and then dragging his legs in behind him. Four grabs the handle on the side of the car and pulls himself in smoothly, like he doesn't have more than 6 feet of body to work with. I jog next to the car, wincing, then grit my teeth and grab the handle on the side. This is going to hurt. Al grabs me under each arm and lifts me easily into the car. Pain shoots through my side, but it only lasts for a second. I see Peter behind him, and my cheeks get warm. Al was trying to be nice. So I smile at him. But I wish people didn't want to be so nice. As if Peter didn't have enough ammunition already. "Feeling okay there?" Peter says, giving me a look of mock sympathy. His lips turned down, his arched eyebrows pulled in. "Or are you a little stiff?" He bursts into laughter at his joke, and Molly and Drew join in. Molly has an ugly laugh, all snorting and shaking shoulders, and Drew's is silent. So it almost looks like he's in pain. "We are all awed by your incredible wit," says Will.
"Yeah, are you sure you don't belong with the erudite, Peter?" Christina adds.
I hear they don't object to sissies. Four, standing in the doorway, speaks before Peter can retort. Am I going to have to listen to your bickering all the way to the fence? Everyone gets quiet, and Four turns back to the car's opening. He holds the handles on either side, his arms stretching wide, and leans forward so his body is mostly outside the car, though his feet stay planted inside. The wind presses his shirt to his chest. I try to look past him at what we're passing, a sea of crumbling, abandoned buildings that get smaller as we go. Every few seconds, though, my eyes shift back to Four. I don't know what I expect to see, or what I want to see, if anything, but I do it without thinking. I ask Christina, "What do you think is out there?" I nod to the doorway. "I mean, beyond the fence." She shrugs. "A bunch of farms, I guess?" "Yeah, but I mean, past the farms. What are we guarding the city from?" She wiggles her fingers at me. "Monsters." I roll my eyes. "We didn't even have guards near the fence until 5 years ago," says Will. "Don't you remember when Dauntless Police used to patrol the factionless sector?" "Yes," I say. I also remember that my father was one of the people who voted to get the Dauntless out of the factionless sector of the city. He said the poor didn't need policing. They needed help, and we could give it to them. But I would rather not mention that now, or here. It's one of the many things Erudite gives as evidence of abnegation's incompetence. "Oh, right," he says. "I bet you saw them all the time." "Why do you say that?" I ask, a little too sharply. I don't want to be associated too closely with the factionless. "Because you had to pass the factionless sector to get to school, right?" "What did you do, memorize a map of the city for fun?" says Christina. "Yes," says Will, looking puzzled. "Didn't you?" The train's brakes squeal, and we all lurch forward as the car slows. I am grateful for the movement. It makes standing easier. The dilapidated buildings are gone, replaced by yellow fields and train tracks. The train stops under an awning. I lower myself to the grass, holding the handle to keep me steady.